Welcome all. Welcome to all the members and guests who've shown up tonight. As always, we welcome guests at any time at the OPCUG meetings. If you want to become a member, I will paste into the chat where you can go a link for that. And that's in the chat now. And I'm now going to mute all, and you will not have the ability to unmute yourself. As per usual on our regular meeting nights, we'll wait for a Q&A section at the call of the speaker, Bob Walker. And if nothing else, after his presentation, we will open up the mics at that point. You can also feel free to put any questions or comments into the chat. I'll be monitoring that, and if it's something that I think bears immediate attention, I'll interrupt Bob. Otherwise, I'll queue them up for after his presentation. Probably later on this week, you'll be able to find the deck. Actually, the deck is there now on the web server. So Bob will have the link to that in his presentation. And the contents of the chat window and the audio track will go up on the website as well sometime later this week. And with that, I will introduce, probably needs no introduction, Bob Walker, and he has shown us presentations before on self-driving cars, and he's going to do an update for it on the self-driving cars tonight. And so, Bob, you can take it away.
Okay, let me just share my screen here. And... okay, everybody see the deck?
Yep, we got it.
Okay, so tonight I'm covering where are self-flying planes and self-driving cars taking us. This is updated this week, so I have an awful lot of information and not very much time here. So the full version of this presentation takes over 2 hours. So to fit into the time available, I'll be glossing over some of the detailed information on some of the slides, and I won't be covering some sections that I moved these to the end of the deck, including a section on electric cars. However, the full deck is will be available at the URL there, and I believe Chris has already pasted this into the chat. In the last few years, there's been a lot of news about autonomous vehicles, especially cars and planes. And we'll find out what's happened up to now and where it's likely to go in the future. I did the first version of this presentation in 2017, and some of the things that were supposed to have happened by now are still at least a few years away. It goes back as far as Leonardo da Vinci. He had a sketch of a pre-programmed cart powered by large coil springs. The control mechanism steered the vehicle through a predetermined course, and in 2006, a working replica was made, and it actually worked. Back in the 1930s, there were a lot of optimistic predictions about what the future was going to be like. This quote here, since the 1930s, self-driving cars have remained perpetually two decades away. Well, over the past century, other autonomous and semi-autonomous vehicles have conquered the air, sea, and roamed the edges of our solar system. And this is from a computer history museum in California. This is what they envisaged, and note the special center line to guide the car. And 30 years later, this is what they got. Are we still at least 20 years away? Let's find out. There are three principles driving the development of autonomous vehicles. There's autonomy. Planes and cars can use automated systems to get the vehicle from one place to the other, with the eventual goal of removing the human operators from the equation. There's cooperation. Upcoming autonomous systems will not only have the vehicles managing themselves independently, but also cooperating with each other and cooperating with traffic control systems. And there'll be distributed control. Traffic control systems will feature distributed control and decision making. The idea of having a big computer room in the basement of City Hall is a thing long gone. Much of this got started with systems for airplanes, and it all started with the autopilot. The early autopilots permitted the aircraft to fly straight and level on a compass course without a pilot's attention, and this greatly reduced the pilot's workload. Anyone that's ever flown a small airplane can attest to the fact that just keeping it straight and level and at the same altitude can be fairly challenging. The first aircraft autopilot was developed by Sperry Corporation in 1912. And this is less than 10 years after the Wright brothers' first flight in 1903. With additional instrumentation, especially radio navigation aids on the ground, it soon became possible to fly and navigate at night and in bad weather. Interconnection of the autopilot with some of this instrumentation was the start of what are termed flight management systems. Radio navigation is the use of radio to determine a plane's position using direction, distance, and velocity measurements between electronic beacons on the ground and the plane. The basic principles are measurements from and to the electrical beacons, especially direction, distance, and velocity. In 1947, a U.S. Air Force C-54 made a complete transatlantic flight, including takeoff and landing, completely under the control of an autopilot. Now, all the instrumentation required to do this pretty much took up the interior of the airplane. An inertial navigation system is a navigation aid that uses a computer, motion sensors such as accelerometers, and rotation sensors such as gyroscopes to continuously calculate the position, orientation, and velocity of the vessel without the need for external references like the radio beacons on the ground. Gyroscopes sense and measure the movement around an axis. Mechanical gyroscopes have been replaced by solid-state gyroscopes. The mechanical gyroscopes were prohibitively expensive. The solid-state ones are much, much, much cheaper. Inertial navigation is used on vessels such as aircraft, ships, submarines, guided missiles, and spacecraft. The instrument landing system is a system that enables the aircraft to land if the pilots are unable to establish visual contact with the runway. It does this using radio signals, and the ILS provides aircraft with horizontal and vertical guidance just before and during landing. One beam keeps the aircraft on the approach path, aimed in the right direction, and the glidescope keeps it on the right descent path until it comes to the end of the runway and lands. A computer interprets the radio signals and gives the pilot a display showing the course corrections required to land. In the case of this diagram, the pilot has to correct to the left and a little upwards to get back on the path. A flight management system is a specialized computer system that automates a wide variety of the in-flight tasks. It integrates the autopilot, the radio navigation systems, the instrument landing system, and other systems to do this. It also uses a comprehensive navigation database, the flight plan, and performance information such as gross weight, fuel weight, and center of gravity. The navigation database contains all the information required for building a flight plan, including the waypoints and intersections, the airways, the radio navigation aids information, airports, runways, and much other information. The flight plan details where the plane is going, how it's going to get there, and when. And it has to be filed before takeoff. For airlines, the flight plan is generally determined and filed by a professional dispatcher on the ground, not by the pilot. The flight plan is entered into the flight management system either by typing it in, and this is prone to error, so it's used mostly by the pilots when they're diverting to an alternate destination. Or it can be selected from a saved library of common routes, or it can be entered via an ACARS data link with the airline dispatch center. The main task of the flight management system is to determine the aircraft's position and use that position information to keep the aircraft on course, on the course determined by the flight plan. Okay. ACARS is the Airport Communications Addressing and Reporting System, and it's a digital data link between the aircraft and ground stations, which allows ground personnel to monitor the aircraft performance and allows them to control some aspects of that performance directly without the pilot's involvement. Prior to ACARS, all the communication between the aircraft and ground personnel was performed by the flight crew using voice communication. And ACARS has the same range limitations as the aircraft radios. With flight management systems and ACARS, the pilot is becoming less and less essential to the normal operation of the airplane. The integrated onboard computer systems, which include the flight management system, control virtually all aspects of the plane's flight and operation. And here on an Airbus, there isn't a control yoke, it's joysticks, and they're connected to the computer, not to the control surfaces of the airplane. And in the middle there, you can see the flight management system consoles. Boeing's theory of operation is that all of the automated systems are there to assist the pilots, but in the end, the pilot is in control. Boeing retains the conventional control yoke in most of its aircraft. Their theory of operation can be problematic when the pilots don't understand the complex control systems and thus can't take control away when they malfunction. And an example of this are the accidents with the 737 MAX, which was grounded for a couple of years while Boeing fixed the problems. Airbus's theory of operation is that all of the automated systems are there to prevent the pilots from making mistakes and will override the pilots to do that. And Airbus has replaced a conventional controller yoke with a joystick. Their theory of operation has caused some accidents because when the automated systems malfunctioned, the pilots weren't able to take over control and the airplanes crashed. So we have problem number one is the pilots have become so dependent on complex onboard systems that they have forgotten how to fly the plane. Some airlines have overcome this by basically paying the pilots to go flying on their days off on small airplanes and really get back to flying again. Problem two is the pilots don't understand many of the critical aspects of how these automated systems work. If you download the deck, you can read this slide. It's a bunch of various accidents and the reasons for them and the outcome. As well, you can play this video on YouTube, which shows an Air France Airbus. When the Airbus was brand new, wasn't even in service yet, they were doing a slow fly pass just over the runway at an air show. The automated control system thought the plane was landing, and when the pilots pushed the throttle and tried to raise the plane up, the system kept it flying straight and level, and it flew into a forest at the end of the runway. The primary purpose of air traffic control systems worldwide is to prevent collisions, organize and expedite the flow of air traffic, and provide information and other support for pilots. And we'll see how this relates to self-driving cars a bit later on. The air traffic control primarily uses radar to keep track of planes and voice radio to communicate with the plane. A transponder is an electronic device that produces a response when it receives a radio or a radar signal, and aircraft have transponders to assist in identifying them on radar. This is a radar, a current type of radar screen showing transponder information. In this case, circled is British Airways Flight 295. It's at 34,000 feet and heading south. This type of radar that you see in all the movies and old TV shows is becoming rapidly obsolete. The transponders are also used in cars for things like remote car keys, toll collection on toll roads, paying parking fees, etc. So we come to traffic collision avoidance systems. The TCAS monitors the airspace around an aircraft or other aircraft that are also equipped with a corresponding active transponder and warns a pilot in case of a threat of a mid-air collision. This system only works between two planes that are equipped with TCAS enabled active transponders. So the aircraft talk to each other and cooperatively deal with the situation without air traffic control. The system issues verbal warnings to the pilots. Minimal warning is an intruder near both horizontally and vertically, and the pilot's required to attempt visual contact and be prepared to maneuver. If it gets too close, one plane will be told to climb, the other plane will be told to descend, and in this case, the intruder will pass either below or above the other plane. You can watch this video that shows the system at work. When TCAS instructions conflict with air traffic control instructions, TCAS is to take precedence. This didn't happen in an accident in Europe several years ago over Germany. One of the pilots followed the air traffic controller instead, and he was very overwhelmed. He was handling two workstations at the same time, and he wasn't aware of both planes at the time. The TCAS commands are still by voice and still require the pilots to carry them out, but not for long. The next generation air transportation system, or next gen, will transform America's air traffic control system from a radar-based system with voice communication via radio to a GPS-based system with digital communication via satellite. The next-gen technology will be used to shorten routes, save time and fuel, reduce air traffic delays, increase airway capacity, and permit controllers to monitor and manage aircraft with greater safety margins. Radio communications will be increasingly replaced by data exchange, and increased automation will reduce the amount of information the aircrew must process at one time. And again, we'll see a bit later on how this will apply to self-driving cars. NextGen will automate much more of the air traffic control system, and we'll have the planes cooperatively managing separation from each other and other flight aspects between themselves without involving the larger air traffic controller system. TCAS will be unnecessary as the airplanes talk to each other and they make minor course corrections long before it becomes a problem. The pilots will not be significantly involved. The Single European Sky Air Traffic Management Research System, or SESAR, is Europe's version of NextGen, and the United States and the European Union are working to make sure these two technologies will be compatible with each other. The SESAR system also unifies all of the European airspace into one single air traffic control zone. So it all started with the autopilot, And over time, this has led to the development of systems that control the aircraft, systems that manage aircraft navigation, and systems that handle aircraft cooperation. Do we still need pilots? It's not clear when the pilot on board will become unnecessary, but as automated systems take a bigger and bigger role, the role of the pilot becomes smaller and smaller. But the airplanes have it easy. The airplanes operate in a much more controlled environment. There are no kids or deer running across the sky. There are thousands of possible destinations instead of tens of millions of possible destinations. And there are hundreds of thousands of route combinations instead of hundreds of millions. It's okay if the control system on a plane costs a few million bucks, where for cars it has to be only a few thousand. The support infrastructure for planes is worth many, many billions of dollars. For an autonomous car, it's a nice to have, but the car has to be able to self-drive all on its own without outside control systems. A plane has skilled, qualified pilots able to take control if something goes wrong, whereas some future self-driving cars may not even have a steering wheel. So now we'll see how some of what we've covered so far applies to autonomous cars. An autonomous car, it's also known as a driverless car, a self-driving car, a robotic car, is a vehicle that is capable of sensing its environment and navigating without human input. Autonomous vehicles sense their surroundings with technologies such as radar, LIDAR, ultrasound, geographic positioning systems, computer vision, and other systems in order to drive themselves at least to a certain degree. Now, many semi-autonomous features are already available in production cars. These include collision avoidance, adaptive cruise control, lane keeping, blind spot monitoring, cross-traffic alerts, and self-parking. Collision avoidance system uses radar, LIDAR, ultrasound, and or image recognition to detect an imminent danger, such as another car, pedestrians, deer, and take action autonomously by braking without any driver input. Cars with collision avoidance may also be equipped with adaptive cruise control, and this uses the same forward-looking sensors. Many systems in current use have a relatively short range, especially with smaller objects like children and small animals. And if the vehicle is traveling at highway speeds, the range may be insufficient to allow the vehicle to stop in time. In a test by the Institute for Highway Safety, or the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, in 2018, the only current model car, which is a Tesla Model 3, that reliably stopped for fixed objects, such as walls, stopped cars, etc., also stopped for tree shadows on the road. Many systems are much more reliable when the adaptive cruise control is turned on. And in some tests, some cars braked earlier and smoother, whereas some slammed on the brakes the last second. Now, I've had experience with the automatic emergency braking. When I was cut off on the 416, the driver was so close when he cut me off, and he was driving much slower, that before I could even get my foot off the gas, the car slammed on the brakes so hard I was pushed against the seatbelt and shoulder harness. This is a chart showing human versus computer reaction time. The actual distance to stop once the brakes have been applied is identical between humans and computers. The big difference is that computers react within a few thousandths of a second, whereas it takes a human up to two or more seconds to react and apply the brakes. In 2015, the U.S. National Highway Traffic Safety Administration or the TSA, NHTSA has recommended automatic emergency braking, or AEB, for vehicles. However, as of 2021, it was still not mandatory in the U.S. And that said, although it's still not mandatory even now, in 2016, the NHTSA convinced automobile manufacturers to include the automatic emergency braking in 99% of new cars sold in the U.S. by the 1st of September 2022. In the European Union, the advanced emergency braking system is required by law on new vehicle models from May 2022 and on all new vehicles sold by May 2024. So by May 2024, they also have to retrofit all the old models that are still in production. The adaptive cruise control automatically adjusts the vehicle speed to maintain a safe distance from vehicles ahead and then accelerate up to the set speed when traffic allows. Adaptive cruise control with stop and go, combined with the collision avoidance system, allows the vehicle to autonomously come to a complete stop and then get going again without driver intervention in stop and go traffic. And if you've ever been stuck on the Queensway or in downtown traffic, stop and go in rush hour, this is a great system to have. Lane departure warning systems. There are three main types of these systems. There's a lane departure warning, which warns the driver if the vehicle is leaving its lane by visual, audible, and or vibration warnings. There's a lane keeping system, which warns the driver, and if no action is taken, automatically takes steps to ensure the vehicle stays in its lane. Left to its own devices, without any driver response, it may wander between the left and right lane limits as it goes down the road. And lane centering assist proactively keeps the vehicle in the center of the lane. The types one and two differ mainly in software, not in hardware. And I've had experience with the lane centering assist. It's in my current vehicle, and it has some limitations. All three types of these systems rely primarily on visible lane markings. They sometimes have difficulty distinguishing between the pavement and the curb or the shoulder if there isn't any lane marking on that side of the lane. They typically cannot decipher faded, missing, or incorrect lane markings. Markings covered in snow or old lane markings that are still visible can hinder the ability of the system. Okay, so blind spot monitoring. The blind spot monitor detects other vehicles located to the driver's side and rear. Warnings can be visual, audible, or vibrating. Some cars, like some Tesla models, integrate the blind spot monitor with their so-called autopilot system for automatic lane changes. When the turn signal is activated, the car checks to the side and back, and if it is clear, it will make the lane change without the driver even having to touch the steering wheel. Some cars with blind spot monitoring do a poor job detecting cars that are coming up very quickly in the other lane on the freeway. In some cars, like Hondas, the screen on the dashboard shows a view from a camera built into the appropriate side view mirror when you activate the turn signal to change lanes, so you don't necessarily have to look over your shoulder. Cross-traffic alert warns you if you're about to back out of your parking space into traffic or into a pedestrian. Some systems will apply the brakes if you don't. These systems have range limitations, and some systems don't detect fast-moving vehicles in time. My vehicle has one of these, and I still check over my shoulder for traffic coming both ways, and I still keep my eyes glued on the backup camera screen because it doesn't always detect pedestrians walking directly behind the car. Self-parking. Automatic parking or self-parking moves a vehicle from a traffic lane into a parking spot to perform either parallel, perpendicular, or angle parking. In some systems, the driver doesn't even have to be in the car. They activate the self-parking. They get out of the car and activate the self-parking system from their key fob or from an app on their smartphone. Some manufacturers, including Tesla, Mercedes, Audi, Volvo, Infiniti, Cadillac, and others combine adaptive cruise control with lane centering assist and collision avoidance, sometimes in combination with other systems, to make the vehicle semi-autonomous. The list of semi-autonomous capable vehicles is continually growing. And that said, most of these systems require you to keep your hands on the steering wheel. And all of these systems still require the driver to maintain control and responsibility for the vehicle while using these systems. For example, in my car, if I'm driving down a freeway like the 416, I can take my hands off the steering wheel and the car will stay in its lane, stay at speed, slow down if somebody slower is in front of it and whatever. But after 5 seconds, I get a warning to put my hands back on the steering wheel. And if I ignore that warning, I'll get audible warnings and the car will start to slow down and eventually come to a stop. Many drivers of current semi-autonomous cars tend to wildly overestimate the real-world capabilities of their cars. And in the picture in the background there, it shows a car on a test track driving into the back of an inflatable test car. Humans are the weakest link in semi-autonomous vehicles, such as Tesla's autopilot system. This quote, maybe these intermediate levels of automation are not a viable consumer product. They go a little too far in encouraging drivers to check out, and yet they, the drivers, aren't ready to take control. You can, I'm not going to show it tonight, but you can go to this video on YouTube. It shows a convoy of autonomous cars going around a test track. When the vehicle at the front of the line slams on its brakes, all of the cars come to a stop without hitting each other, without a driver inside. And there's also a companion video that shows how this was made, because when you watch this video, it's really amazing considering this was made 7 or 8 years ago. General Motors has a system called Super Cruise Hands-Free Driving Assist. They spent several years LiDAR mapping. We'll cover LiDAR in a little bit in a minute there. They LiDAR mapped over 400,000 kilometers of roadways in the U.S. and Canada. These LiDAR scans provide inch-perfect views of the roads that the car's computer processes and uses in conjunction with all the real-time sensors to read the road and to pilot the car. They're constantly redriving and updating the scans to account for construction work, road rerouting, et cetera, et cetera. While most semi-autonomous systems are reactive, this system is a bit more predictive. Like other systems, it uses sensors to view the world around it, but it knows from the mapping when construction zones or tight turns are coming up, and will slow down if necessary and resume full speed afterwards. The Super Cruise function could only be used originally on limited access highways. For example, they have no traffic lights, no pedestrians, and far fewer complex situations. and it still requires a driver to take over in construction zones or other unusual situations. GM is expanding the Super Cruise network to include some regular highways, such as the Trans-Canada, Route 66, and the Pacific Coast Highway. The cars also use a small camera mounted on the steering column to track the eye movements of the driver and make sure they're keeping their eyes on the road. And they keep track of when the driver's eyes are wandering. Depending on the speed you're traveling, you're allowed to look away for between 4 and 11 seconds. The faster you go, the shorter the time you can look away from the road. Now, these high-resolution LiDAR maps and Super Cruise technology are becoming available in other GM vehicles after the initial Cadillac buyers were used as guinea pigs to iron out some of the real-world bugs. Now, the high-definition mapping required for these systems, especially for mapping outside the freeway systems, a mapping system is going to be needed to make these available to the entire automotive industry. And it's way up in the air right now whether this will be done by GM and other companies can subscribe to it, whether it'll be done by Google, whether it'll be done by governments, or whether some other entity is going to take this over. And it may be a long time before this is ultimately decided. So pretty much everything we've seen so far is available right now at a car dealer near you. So let's have a look at what's coming up. This diagram shows some of the different sensor systems and control systems that will be in the self-driving cars. And this is another diagram showing similar things and what the different sensors detect and whatever. And this shows the vehicle camera systems in action. And all these diagrams are available if you download the deck and you can read for them in detail. This is another diagram that shows some of the same things. Now, we mentioned LIDAR a bit earlier. This was originally a contraction of light and radar. It's now considered to be an acronym for light imaging detection and ranging. LIDAR is similar in concept to radar. Except it uses laser light instead of radio waves. LIDAR mapping is commonly used for high-resolution mapping with applications that include autonomous vehicles. In autonomous vehicles, LIDAR is used for control using the LIDAR sensors on board and for navigation by using higher resolution LIDAR maps. And this diagram shows how it all sort of fits together. There's the sensing, the perception of what the sensors pick up, the planning, and the control of the vehicle. This shows how a city street looks to a Google self-driving car. And the inset there, you see that the street as it actually is. And in the diagram, you see how the street looks to the car. Now, as much as other developers are depending on complex sensor systems for a completely self-driving car, Tesla is depending mostly on just the camera using computer vision combined with artificial intelligence as the main system for its self-driving cars. However, many experts in the field many people think that Tesla is a car company that is probably the most advanced in practical self-driving technology, but this is definitely not the case. Tesla's self-driving strategy has been criticized as dangerous and obsolete by several experts in the field and by many other companies and organizations. It was abandoned by most other companies years ago in favor of much more complex systems. And the experts feel that Tesla's approach of trying to achieve autonomous vehicles by not using high-definition maps and LiDAR is not feasible. In May 2021, a study by Guidehouse Insights, Tesla was ranked as last for both strategy and execution in the autonomous driving sector. Over the years, Tesla has marketed its autonomous driving technology under various names, including autopilot, enhanced autopilot, and full self-driving capability. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration in the States has initiated at least 30 investigations into Tesla crashes that were believed to involve the use of autopilot, and with some of them involving fatalities. Tesla is also the subject of several lawsuits over injuries, deaths, false advertising, et cetera, et cetera. And there's an excellent Wikipedia article on the autopilot system. It's a very long article and has quite a lot of technicalities in it. But among other problems, Teslas have a bad habit of running into the back of stopped emergency vehicles. Several accidents of this sort have happened. In a 2019 Bloomberg survey, hundreds of Tesla owners reported dangerous behaviors with the autopilot, such as phantom braking, veering out of the lane, failing to stop for road hazards. The autopilot users have also reported the software crashing and turning off suddenly. They've reported collisions with ramp barriers. They've experienced radar failures, unexpected swerving, tailgating, and uneven speed changes. The various bodies involved in mapping out the future of driverless vehicles have come up with five levels of automation, from driver only to completely driverless. This diagram shows some of it. This diagram shows in another way, a bit more visual. Diagram here explains it in layman's terms. Level zero is no automation whatsoever. Level one is hands on. Level two is hands off. Level three is eyes off. Level four is mind off. And level five is completely automated with the steering wheel being optional. The software for autonomous cars uses neural network computing systems that mimic the human brain and can learn to do tasks by considering examples. The human brain can be considered to be one of the best processors. It contains billions and trillions of neurons. And if we copy this type of design, we can maybe solve the hard for computer, easy for humans issues. Neural networks are used for several things, including driving a vehicle. With neural networks, decisions are not absolute, but are assigned a probability. In this case, the computer on the car determines the chance. Will the parked car stay still, move forward, or back up? Is this thing by the curb a pedestrian, a mailbox, or something else? And should we keep up at speed, brake hard, or coast? So in this case, the car is able to weigh the probability a pedestrian is about to cross the street and decide what it's best to do, maintain speed, stop, or coast. There are several layers to artificial intelligence, including machine learning and deep learning. The artificial intelligence is the idea that a machine can learn, think, and behave like a human. In the autonomous driving example, a car with a high-powered processor can monitor the data and allow it to improve its driving performance over time. and compare with other vehicles to do the same thing. Deep learning, I'm not going to get deeply into this, but it includes the idea that you show the computer many, 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 many examples of something and label those examples, and it learns from that what the somethings are and gradually becomes to able to error freely identify that. And there are several branches of artificial intelligence, and the whole subject of artificial intelligence is a good topic for another presentation, so I won't get deeply into this. But the artificial intelligence systems can teach themselves to drive by watching a human do it. And the developers of these systems don't fully understand how the car makes its decisions. In reality, in programming these systems, a computer watches a virtual car being driven in a computer simulator to learn how to drive. But again, how does it make these decisions? An example here, a medical artificial intelligence systems was programmed with a database of physical illnesses and their symptoms and treatments, and learned the specifics by digesting hundreds of thousands of detailed patient records. On its own, it started diagnosing mental illness and psychiatric problems like schizophrenia, even though it was not part of its programming or design to do this. And the developers don't understand how the system figured out how to do this. We're taking part now in the fourth industrial revolution. The first industrial revolution back in the 1800s was steam-based machines. The second industrial revolution in the 19th and 20th centuries was electrical energy-based mass production. The third industrial revolution in the late 20th century and early 21st century were computer and internet-based. And now we're getting into the fourth industrial revolution, where artificial intelligence software combines with big data, the Internet of Things, and the cloud to form the revolution. Stephen Hawking, the famous futurist and astrophysicist, said that computers will overtake humans with AI within the next 100 years. When that happens, we need to make sure the computers have goals aligned with ours. Personally, I think Stephen was a little off on his prediction. We're likely looking at only a very few years before this becomes a major consideration. The United States, China, Russia, Britain, and other countries are already heavily involved in cyber warfare and cyber espionage, and they see artificial intelligence as the wave of the future. The people involved in the cyber warfare and cyber espionage do not have your best interests in mind. If you remember the Terminator movies, a global defense network based on artificial intelligence called Skynet became self-aware. When its human creators tried to deactivate it, Skynet decided it must kill all humans to protect itself. In a 2023 interview on artificial intelligence, film director James Cameron said, "I warned you about this back in 1991. So brace yourselves, we are coming." However, it's not all doom and gloom. Let's look at autonomous vehicle software a bit more closely. This software can handle most normal driving reasonably well, but it has a hard time with things like recognizing the edges of pavement and sidewalks, exceptions to the norm like car accidents, emergency vehicles, construction, bad weather, abnormal pedestrian behavior, and animals. And as a note here, engineers in Australia are having difficulty getting these systems to detect kangaroos, even though they can easily detect other animals. There's something about kangaroos that the systems just don't understand. And the other thing these systems don't handle well is understanding gestures and nonverbal cues by police, pedestrians, and other drivers. These issues pose difficulties in collecting a large enough sample of real-world data with which to train the self-driving software. Currently, the images used to train the neural networks must be annotated manually. Someone needs to painstakingly go through each picture and label the different elements on a pixel-by-pixel level, separating the drivable road from the sidewalk or from pedestrians from a road sign. Tesla currently employs over 600 people to manually annotate images and is shooting for over 1,000 by the end of the year. And this was, quote, was from 2017. New computer simulators such as Cynthia correctly annotate images automatically and teach artificial intelligence systems how to behave even in most unusual situations, including complex weather systems with rain, snow, and different seasons. There was a video available when I first did this showing what it looks like when you're driving a car through a computer, but I checked and this video is no longer available, which is too bad. NVIDIA, the computer vision company, has developed a very sophisticated simulator in the cloud that can be used for autonomous car development. And again, there's two links here, one to a video and one to a website with a lot more information on this. Note how the system here in the self-driving cars notices the vehicle that has a human driver, and it's keeping an eye out to watch out for the human. Ford is the first automaker to test fully autonomous vehicles in winter weather, including snow. And this is a major step forward to fully autonomous driving. Ford's fully autonomous vehicle strategy uses high-resolution 3D mapping and LiDAR for localization to facilitate driving when road markings are not visible. That said, my interactive cruise control on my Ford, if you're driving in a snowstorm, it disconnects because the sensors get plugged up by snow. Autonomous vehicles are have to be designed to adapt to the current road situation. They're also being eventually designed to work with each other and with external control systems. By communicating with each other, and with intelligent infrastructure, autonomous cars will vastly improve traffic flow. The current road infrastructure will need changes and improvements for autonomous cars to function optimally. However, the much more efficient use of existing road capacity will seriously reduce the need to expand existing roads and build new ones. And building and expanding roads is very expensive. So the cost avoidance of having to do this will help pay for these systems. Future cooperative infrastructure can be installed on an intersection by intersection basis over time. And temporary infrastructure control systems can be used for construction zones or special events. The controllers at a given intersection can network and cooperate with controllers at adjacent intersections, but don't need to be controlled from a central computer. The controllers will likely be boxes with cameras, sensors, computers, transceivers, and mounted in conjunction with the traffic lights. That all said, there will need to be a critical mass of vehicles capable of working with such systems before they come become commonplace. This is the typical chicken and egg conundrum. This shows a cooperative intersection with the cars, autonomous cars, sort of interleaving as they go through and not hitting each other. When a dumb car comes along, the intersection will revert to normal operation. Cars being able to cooperate with each other will help with speed deharmonization and using cooperative adaptive cruise control extends adaptive cruise control by having the vehicles cooperate to keep a specific distance between vehicles to allow platooning for better fuel mileage and increased road traffic capacity. By platooning and keeping the vehicles quite close together, only the first and last cars need to experience larger aerodynamic forces. And this keeps the fuel economy much better. By adding autonomous steering to platooning, the lead vehicle, whether autonomous or human-driven, can guide the platoon around accidents or through construction zones. And smart vehicles with artificial intelligence can automatically join and leave platoons. And this diagram shows examples of this where you can merge onto a freeway into the middle of a platoon because it'll open up a space for you, join the lane, and then go into the next lane and pass the platoon if you're not going fast enough for you. Now, several companies have demonstrated these types of cooperative driving systems using their own vehicles and using their own proprietary technologies. They're currently working on the standards, protocols, and technology required for universal cooperative driving systems, but progress towards this cooperation has been slow because everybody wants to jealously guard their own proprietary technologies. Current maximum freeway capacity is about 2,200 passenger vehicles per hour per lane. Autonomous cars could increase the capacity to 8,200 cars per hour per lane. With 100% connected vehicles using vehicle-to-vehicle communication, this capacity could be increased to over 12,000 passenger vehicles per hour. And this is based on detailed traffic simulations, and it shows how the capacity of the current road network can be dramatically increased using autonomous vehicles. There's some very good traffic simulation software out there, and the experts have identified over 25 different driving styles and many sub-styles, and the percentages of the driving population that each style represents. They've also identified the different vehicle types and driver styles likely to be driving each type of vehicle. And this information, they can do very accurate traffic simulations to test different situations, road designs, etc. This shows 227 people and 200 vehicles in on the road. The traffic will be more efficient and congestion decreased with autonomous vehicles. Possible problem is traffic congestion may increase as people have their cars wander around or go home instead of paying for parking during a workday. Because the technology will increase the ease of driving and decrease the cost of driving, congestion might increase as people forgo rapid transit because they can do things in their car instead of driving. There's a risk of increased suburbanization as travel becomes less costly and time-consuming. During COVID crisis, traffic density was dramatically decreased as people worked from home. But as we're coming out of COVID, many people are returning to work, at least some of the time, and some employers have indicated they expect all their workers to return to the office. Transportation as a service sees a shift away from personally owned vehicles towards mobility solutions that are consumed as a service. The shift is fueled by providers like ride sharing and email e-hailing services like Uber, car sharing services, and on-demand pop-up bus services. This is motivated by the economic benefit of using on-demand services versus owning a personal car. And these services are widely expected to become a lot more affordable and popular when the cars can drive autonomously. This will greatly reduce the number of cars that are individually owned and be replaced by taxi pooling and other car sharing services. But without drivers, who's going to clean the puke and garbage out of the transportation as a service cars? Or during a pandemic, who's going to sanitize the car between the users? Much more likely to appeal to people in the central core of cities and suburban and rural developers. Now, safety is a big consideration with autonomous vehicles. 95% of road accidents are caused by human error. And I'll make a note, this figure is now widely disputed. Traffic accidents, road accidents, is the eighth leading cause of death globally. Human error has seen a sharp uptake in recent years as more and more distracted driving happens because of people on their phones and such. Widespread use of autonomous vehicles could eliminate 90 to 95% of all auto accidents in the United States, prevent billions in damages and health costs, and save thousands of lives. Now, these are 2017 figures, and these figures are now being widely disputed. And as noted before, or as noted by the RAND Corporation, our work suggests that it is sensible to allow autonomous vehicles on America's roads when they are judged to be just moderately safer than having a person behind the wheel. Waiting longer will kill thousands of people unnecessarily. And that said, the idea of preventing 10,000 human error fatalities by having 7,500 computer error fatalities is somewhat controversial. And as noted before, having the intermediate levels of automation may not be a good consumer product because it encourages the drivers to check out. Now, we've noted that some of the experts want to introduce the autonomous cars ASAP to save lives. Others want them to be withheld until they're fully perfected. The eventual solution will likely be somewhere between these two extremes. There's been considerable news coverage in May 2016. Oh, a little bit of a typo there. My bad. When the first Tesla accident happened where the driver was killed while driving using the autopilot. However, to put this in perspective, on the same day, the usual 100 or so people in the U.S. were killed in car accidents, and hundreds more were injured, and it didn't even rate stories on the paper. In real-world testing, the accident rates involving driverless cars are twice as high as for regular cars. However, the driverless cars weren't at fault. They were typically hit from behind by inattentive or aggressive humans, unaccustomed to self-driving motorists, being such sticklers for the road rules. Google has started to program its cars differently to behave in more familiar ways. Some of the things about safety is with fully autonomous cars, there's no distracted drivers, no road rage, no drunk or stone drivers. With all the expectations that were around a few years ago that autonomous vehicles would greatly improve road safety, there are now several critics who make compelling arguments about why this may not necessarily be the huge improvement that was expected. And many of the safety benefits won't be realized until almost all vehicles on the road are self-driven and not computer-driven. There have been several major accidents recently as a result of distracted, inattentive, or asleep truck drivers piling into the back of stopped traffic. Some of the results have been disastrous, but a self-driving truck can be on the road 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, instead of being limited by regulations, how much time a driver can be behind the wheel. No more drowsy drivers. One of the advantages of autonomous vehicles is that, unlike some people, autonomous vehicles won't operate when conditions are more hazardous than they can handle. But who decides what they can handle? The vehicle owner? The manufacturer? Public laws and regulations? There are several examples on these two TV shows on the Discovery Channel of the consequences of driving big trucks and other vehicles in bad weather that the drivers can't handle. And once almost completely autonomous vehicles become ubiquitous, is it realistic to expect an inexperienced driver to take over in bad weather and difficult conditions? I know myself, some of the most challenging driving I've ever done is being caught in winter storms. The mobility of the young, the elderly, and the disabled will be increased with autonomous cars. Vehicle occupants can spend travel time engaged in other activities, such as texting, reading, napping, maybe even sex. Fuel efficiency can be increased. Vehicles won't need nearby urban parking, so downtown parking space can be repurposed for other things like parks. Occupations based on driving, such as truck driving, taxis and Uber, pizza and other deliveries will become obsolete. Other occupations and economies based on public transit, crash repair, automobile insurance, etc. might suffer as the technology becomes render some of these occupations nearly obsolete. And there's a diagram here showing how it will affect various facets of society. Prognosticators say such other occupations such as artificial intelligence programming are expected to increase, but that's likely short term until the systems learn to program themselves. Sociologists expect this will lead to a big increase in the gig economy and minimum wage part-time economy and a big decrease in the middle class. There's all sorts of unknown economic and social implications that are being postulated with autonomous cars, and some of the benefits of the autonomous vehicles might be lessened by major economic displacement. There's privacy issues. Data is fast becoming the most valuable resource on Earth. Even current vehicles are a huge source of information about you. Existing cars are just another device gathering information about you. Right now, keep in mind that in major accidents, police confiscate the vehicle's computers to determine how fast the car was going and other pertinent information. Google warned us a few years ago that your new smart TV may be listening and your smart home devices may be listening. Now your car might be listening too, and there's a link there to an article on the data nightmare. Existing cars can be hacked or stolen, hijacked or stolen, can be crashed. There's even vehicular ransomware. Terrorists could take self-driving cars and load them with explosives. There's all sorts of questions on liability, and I'm just going to bypass those for now. There's inconsistent national and provincial or state regulations. that are causing problems. It makes it very difficult for manufacturers to match all the regulations. And vehicle owners might not be able to travel outside their jurisdictions of residence, at least not in full self-driving mode. And there's going to have to be various interjurisdictional agreements to do this. Now, in 2017, many car companies and other companies and organizations were testing self-driving cars with safety drivers on public roads. In 2017, by 2017, most of the Google Street View cars were autonomous, even though they have safety drivers. In 2017, Uber launched a self-driven car cab service in partnership with Nutonomy in Singapore. Autonomous cars without safety drivers were on the road in 2017 in parts of Arizona and several other places. Autonomous trucks were expected on the road, at least in limited access freeways between cities, within 3 to 5 years, and that's already passed. So there's a lot of companies involved in the self-driving car business. And where's the city of Ottawa on all this? QNX makes Unix-like real-time fault-tolerant multitask operating systems for embedded systems like car control systems. The QNX operating systems and other QNX software can already be found in more than 60 million cars around the world. And these are 2017 figures, and QNX is based in Canada. In 2017, they were in their software was in over 250 vehicle models, and now it's much more. Ottawa's opened a 16-kilometer test track for cutting-edge autonomous vehicle technologies, and it's the only facility of its kind in North America at the time. And this is just across Woodruff Avenue from the PN Sportsplex. They can simulate all sorts of real-world driving situations on this track. Now, there's been various implementation timelines proposed over the years, and these are mostly diagrams from 2017. It's expected that once autonomous vehicles reach a critical mass, non-autonomous vehicles will likely be increasingly restricted or banned from certain areas. In remote and isolated areas, human drivers will likely still be required for the foreseeable future. The biggest hurdle to adoption of adaptive car, autonomous cars is not technical, but human. What if your autonomous car doesn't drive like you do? Say you're one of those people who drives really slowly on the highway. How will you react when you're sitting in the front seat of a vehicle that's driving faster than you're used to? Or vice versa, will people be tempted to take control from their vehicles and drive even faster? If a vehicle requires you to suddenly take the wheel, will you be able to quickly turn your attention away from whatever you were doing while your car was doing the driving for you? This is the results of a survey. Back then, 50% of people said they would take a ride in a fully self-driving cars. Now, who's going to get a self-driving car? You remember there was initial resistance by many people to autonomous cars. However, the instructions are expected to be similar to the smartphone. At first, only techies and geeks bought them, and other people thought they were a waste of money. Now, a few years later, almost everybody has a smartphone. Self-driving trucks and delivery vehicles will probably be the first autonomous vehicles on the road in numbers, as employers opt to save money and get rid of personnel issues. Acceptance of self-driving technology was greatest with younger respondents and those with higher incomes and education levels. Early adopters will include those who otherwise have driving limitations, like the disabled or the seniors. Millennials are expected to be early adopters. Seniors who still have a driver's license are expected to resist self-driving cars. And here's a diagram showing the types of people who are being resistant. It's the middle-aged people some of us, the people for whom getting a driver's license and getting a vehicle as soon as they could was part of the culture. It'll be a lot more difficult for them to let go of the steering wheel, but even those people hate driving to and from work and will eventually be won over by the advantages of autonomous vehicles. Curiously, surveys show that confident, capable drivers are more likely to use a self-driving car than nervous and poor drivers. High-risk drivers, including impaired people that drive a lot impaired or stoned, distracted, or drowsy, will likely be early adopters to either avoid penalties or to get around suspended licenses. But a lot of people say they'll turn off the automated system so they can run red lights and speed when they're running late for an appointment. So driving for the pleasure of driving may become a thing of the past. And what about motorcycles? Already 6 times more dangerous than cars, will there be autonomous motorcycles? What about the freedom of the open road? This all said, where are we now? When I first did this presentation in 2017, companies including Tesla and Ford were predicting self-driving cars would be readily available by 2022. However, while the companies have been able to develop systems that can handle normal daily driving under normal conditions, they found that making systems that can handle endless so-called edge cases, such as unpredictable drivers, road obstacles, poor or missing traffic controls, flawed maps, bad weather, following instructions of a police officer managing traffic at a crash site, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is not all that easy. So most of the companies, including Ford and Volkswagen, that were very optimistic in 2017, have greatly scaled back and delayed plans for fully self-driving cars in favor of improving and expanding on their semi-autonomous technologies. That said, many companies are limiting the capabilities of their vehicles for legal and liability reasons. So even the semi-autonomous technologies are being somewhat limited because of the legal and liability issues that may come up. Cars that can drive, self-drive in cities with controlled intersections, pedestrians, et cetera, where the driver can take over for unusual conditions like road construction, accidents, emergency vehicles, et cetera, are probably only 3 to 5 years away from a technical standpoint. But again, the legal and liability issues may be an issue. And it may be several more years after that before cars can reliably self-drive under all conditions, including bad weather, and may still be limited in unusual situations, like the remote winding cow path road into the cottage. Since 2020, Waymo, Cruise, which is owned by GM, Nuro, and other companies have operated driverless taxis in U.S. cities like San Francisco and Phoenix. Although there have been some problems like unplanned and unexpected stops in travel lanes where they obstruct traffic, obstruct transit service, and obstruct emergency vehicles, their use is being slowly expanded, both within these cities and to other cities and municipalities and jurisdictions. Other countries, including Singapore and China, also have driverless taxis in some cities. Nuro began autonomous commercial deliveries in California in 2021. Now, vehicles like driverless taxis and delivery vans are able to operate now in some of these places because they're limited to very specific geographic areas, very specific modes of operation, and very specific legal operating conditions. Vehicles available to the public that can self-drive can't be subject to such restrictions. And even right now, self-driving tractors are plowing many of our fields, and some are on the optimal paths mapped by drones loaded with sensors. And we had a presentation on this back in 2016 by some gentlemen showing how drones and other things can do all this mapping and real-world application use. So all that said, the future is likely to be very messy, just like in the past. And just as a note, some other autonomous vehicles include ships, trains, drones, warehouse and factory equipment, underwater exploratory vehicles, paraplanes and gyrocopters, and some of these are being produced by an Ottawa company called Mimist, and I have several friends that work for this company, and Mars rovers. And this is the end of my presentation so far. That said, I've put a lot of information at the end of the deck here that you can download, and it covers such areas as moral responsibility, like how does an autonomous vehicle decide how to behave in a situation where either passengers or other traffic participants will be endangered, and it'll be years before the systems will be able to actually do any of this. There's a section on speed variance. It's not actual part of autonomous driving per se, but it shows why autonomous cars can make things safer by eliminating the speed variance on roads. There's several slides on this, and it shows in some areas raising the speed limit has made the roads safer because drivers that refuse to drive faster than the speed limit stop being a hazard to other traffic. Starting in 2022, GPS-based speed limiters are mandatory on all new cars in the European Union. There's a couple slides here on in-car experiences that car companies are working on. And remember the old program Knight Rider with the car as your friend. And several car companies are working on these technologies. And there's quite a few slides on electric cars because they're often mentioned in the same breath as self-driving cars. So quite a lot of information on these. And different types of plug-in hybrids. Tesla has unveiled its electric big rig. They unveiled it back in 2016, and the list of prospective customers includes Pepsi, Walmart, and Anheuser-Busch. Production of these big rigs actually started in October 2022, and the first deliveries were made in December 2022 to PepsiCo. And there's a little bit of a biography about myself. So let me stop the share. And
Amazing, Bob. I can't unmute everybody, but what I can do is mute all with the ability to unmute yourself. So that would include you, Bob. You'll have to re-unmute yourself. So now anybody can unmute themselves if they wanted to chime in with a question or or a comment. We had lots of comments in the chat. There were a couple of questions that, for the most part, I think you covered them in later parts. But Tom asked, is the mapping really needed if the cars and trucks can do a good vision and thinking? And I sort of wondered about that a little bit, too. What's your thinking on that, Bob? That is it really going to be needed to do that LiDAR mapping if you just increase the ability to understand the environment around you?
Well, that's Tesla's view, that they don't need the LiDAR maps.
Okay.
It's not the view of pretty much anybody, any other companies and organizations in the field. The reality is the amount of artificial intelligence and the processing required on board the vehicle to do it all very successfully is not within current capabilities. It's probably a possibility maybe 10 years in the future, but based on the on current computer technologies and capacity and everything else, it's not really an issue. And I see this almost daily, because when I'm driving with my cruise control on and the automatic lane centering on, it works fine in when there's clear lane markings on either side of the lane. But when I'm driving on a regular rural highway, it quite often loses track of and can't distinguish the shoulder from the pavement. And the system bings and switches off the lane centering when this happens. So, and that seems to be a very easy problem to overcome. So, again, the amount of computer processing power and AI required on board will be considerable, and will be a while before that comes about.
Yeah, so maybe a combination of having the LiDAR mapping with the artificial intelligence on board might be a good combination. There was a question from Carol, what do insurers do? And she made a comment about increased taxes with no traffic infractions. The cities still need to make their money. What is your thought on the how the insurers are reacting to this? Are they embracing it, but that could negatively impact their industry as a whole, I guess, the need for insurance? On the other hand, you know, insurance bills will go down for sure.
It's a mixed blessing for them. The insurance payouts will go down dramatically. But when something does happen, who are they going to sue?
Yeah.
And the insurance companies will still make lots of money off car thefts and other such things, weather-related events and whatever. So it's like being in the situation of buggy manufacturers back in the early 1900s.
Yeah. Yeah, I get you on that.
So okay. Can I just ask one thing?
Yep.
So are you saying that when you have these self-driving cars, you don't own it? But why would the person not sitting in the car be liable? Because that they're not actually driving it, or?
Well, that's the case. And again, a lot of these liability issues are still way up in the air.
No. Oh, okay.
The passenger of a self-driving car, like the passenger of a self-driving taxi right now in San Francisco, is not liable if that taxi causes an accident. The company that owns the taxi is liable, and it's up to that company and the company that designed the software and the hardware to decide who's going to pay for it all.
Mm-hmm.
And the insurance company that is covering them. So these issues are still very much up in the air.
Yeah, not easy questions or answers. I think I covered most of the other straight out questions. There are a lot of comments in the chat for sure. So people might want to review the chat when it gets posted, or now you can actually copy the chat to your local computer if you click the three dots at the bottom of the chat window. Are there any other questions or comments? Anybody who wants to unmute themselves? We have a lot of comments thanking you, Bob, in the chat. A lot of people saying great presentation and really good presentation, excellent, great update, interesting progression, amazing depth. Thank you. I think it was really personally, I'd like to extend my thanks to you, Bob, for this. I thought it was a really, really great presentation and very balanced too, which is I think very important with this, that it's not all rosy, but it's not all doom and gloom either. So we've got things to look forward to, but there's a lot of thorny issues to work through on our way to Nirvana.
Yeah, the self-driving cars there's so many disparate aspects to the whole thing. It's not just the technology. There's so many other things that are involved that it's a fairly complex field. And I could have easily done a 3-hour presentation and still had stuff to add. So I tried to do as balanced as I could within the time available. So
yeah, no, that's really great. And we posted into the chat the link to the, and I'll post it again. Oops, that's not what I want. I'll post in again so people don't have to scroll right to the start. So there's the link now posted to the chat at the bottom to the presentation. So yeah, I would highly encourage people to download the deck and read it at their leisure, because there's a lot of background information in there for sure.
About the only thing that was missing was the DARPA competition years earlier, I think in the early 2000s, where they gave a prize to the best self-driving car in a desert or a non-occupied, non-city place, where they gave prizes to the people or the cars that came in first. And this was driving around basically deserted roads and so on, but managing to handle sand and ruts and stuff like that and be able to navigate to their goal.
Wasn't that the one that a great number of the vehicles, you know, crashed and stopped and everything else within, like, you know, a mile of starting or something like that, I seem to recall?
That happened in the first few competitions. It okay. happened much less often towards the end. Then it was more okay. of a race.
okay.
So it wasn't. They did have lots of problems at the start. They had lots of cars that got lost and didn't got stuck and didn't go on. But I think they ran it, I don't know, for several years at least.
Okay.
And towards the end, which is why they kind of stopped it, almost all the cars were being successful in finishing it. So then it was a matter of who was the fastest rather than the smartest.
Ah, okay. Interesting.
Yeah, several years ago, long before my first presentation, there was actually a crew from one of the European universities, I believe it was, that had a self-driving car drive from London, England, across Europe and Asia to Beijing, Spain, or China, I mean, Beijing, China, completely on its own. It had safety drivers and observers in the car, but the car managed to for the most part do it all on its own. And there's some pretty desolate areas going through Central Asia there that would be pretty hard to navigate. So
interesting.
Hey, Bob. Have you seen some of the video of self-driving from Tesla? Because they are very remarkable.
Yeah, Tesla and its boss man there, Elon Musk, have been accused of greatly exaggerating a lot of the advertising. And it turns out that a lot of these videos that they've released have been doctored or falsified to they don't represent the real truth. So you have to take anything coming out of Elon Musk's world with a grain of salt.
Yeah, but I have seen from people using self-driving, because there is a lot of self-driving cars from Tesla. They have driven millions of kilometers already, and because they have a constant connection to their computer, it improved very, very quickly. One of the latest version, instead of using detection of cars or trees or things, instead what it does, it builds a model of the world and then use that to drive in the real world. And that makes the thing so much more efficient. And I have seen videos of people driving through construction, traffic, and all kinds of conditions in the last 2-3 years. And it's amazing how fast it improves. And it drives in condition that I think are probably better than most human can do, because they don't get distracted and that kind of stuff. So I'm very impressed with what they do. And their computer is also one of the most advanced AI computer, and it improved it exponentially. So it is remarkable what they can do right now. But one of the things that you said that is very true is one of the big limitation is regulation. For example, they are required to make a full stop at a stop sign. Most people don't. It's about maybe 1% of the people do a full stop at a stop sign. And because of the regulation, they have to. And that changed the dynamics of other drivers around the car. So yes, regulation is very much a problem. But right now, people, and to answer one of the questions I've seen on the chat, is right now people are required to be ready to take over the driving. So whatever happened, it's the driver's fault, responsibility to do anything and everything whenever there is a need to do that, to take over.
Joss, I assume that this is in response to you. Tom posted into the chat, fanboys.
Yeah. The thing is that I have seen enough videos to convince myself that this is not just publicity.
Okay. Okay, any last comments before, or questions before we terminate the night? Going, done. So thanks again, Bob, for your presentation. It was really, really great. And it was a really good update to your previous presentation, and lots of fantastic information and great depth in your deck. So thank you very much on behalf of the whole group. And with that, I think we'll call tonight's meeting an end. And thanks everybody for attending. And we'll see you all next week at Q&A, or we have our next monthly meeting, which is all going to be about, if I recall correctly, astronomy. And yeah, it's going to be Celestial Shadows, Eclipses of the Sun and Moon by Howard Simcover. So I'd encourage everybody to come on out for that. So with that, thanks very much, folks, and we'll see you later.